Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I happen to believe that we have a responsibility to the people in this country who wake up every day worried about feeding and clothing their children. And I think those people in New York who work in financial markets understand, in some ways at least, what can be done.
John Edwards, obviously, and Elizabeth Edwards is my first guest today, here to stump for her husband, the Democratic presidential hopeful. Among the things the campaign is emphasizing right now, a plan called College for Everyone that helps pay for the first year of college for any student who works at least 10 hours a week. It's part of his larger anti-poverty agenda. And the Edwards position on the war funding bill keeps sending the president the same bill with a timetable for withdrawal over and over again and dare him to keep vetoing it. Mrs. Edwards, so nice of you to come on again. Welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be with you, Brian.
Let's talk about the war funding bill first. And here is part of the new TV and internet commercial that the Edwards campaign has produced.
Don't back down to President Bush. Send him the same bill again and again.
Send them the same bill again and again. What's the thinking behind that strategy?
This is not an area in which we ought to be compromising. The election of 2006 was a pretty clear statement about where the American people are on this war. And honestly, the Iraqi people are pretty much the same place. They'd like, by overwhelming numbers, like America no longer to be present occupying Iraq, and so we need to keep the pressure on. The idea of compromise under these circumstances is untenable. We have alternatives, and the alternative is to keep sending the same bill. I know in the debate, that was a clip from the Democratic debate, Senator Obama said, you know, we need 16 more votes to override the veto. Well, we're not going to get the 16 votes. We know that. That's unrealistic. But what we can do is continue, because we obviously do have the votes, to pass this particular bill over and over again and continue sending it to him.
But if President Bush just vetoes it over and over again, is this just political theater?
Well, I think at some point he's going to recognize that he has no alternative, but to accept the bill with these limitations. And if he doesn't, it's President Bush, not the Congress, that has stopped the funding of the troops.
And we should acknowledge, as you did, that clip came from the first Democratic presidential hopefuls debate about a week and a half ago now on MSNBC. Senator Clinton now proposes a vote to rescind the authorization for the war, the authorization that Congress passed in 2002. So is the Edwards approach better for some reason, or maybe complementary to that?
Without meaning any disrespect, I think that Senator Clinton's proposal actually is theater. This exact same kind of resolution was passed, withdrawing the Gulf of Tonkin resolution with respect to Vietnam. Is 3 years later that war ended. She knows history well enough to know that this is, I mean, it's a worthwhile statement to make this statement, but that is not the way to end the war. The way to end the war is to stop the funding.
And so you think the act of sending the president the same bill over and over again would somehow wear him down?
I think that when he realizes that I think he believes that the Democratic Congress is going to cave. I mean, I think they've said as much, that they believe that the Democrats will cave. And if you send it back even the second time, what you're telling him is we're not.
In fact, so far, haven't heard any indication from the Democratic leaders in Congress that they're seriously considering this idea of sending the same bill again and again. Why don't you think they're taking that up?
I have to say that one of the perhaps good things and bad things about Congress is it's a place of compromise. And I think perhaps that's the mindset that a lot of the legislators come in with, that, well, this didn't work, so we'll compromise and find something in between. That might be fine with respect to some legislation. It is not fine with respect to continuing a war.
Elizabeth Edwards, my guest on WNYC. We can take some phone calls for her at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email brianlehrshow@wnyc.org, as she appears, obviously, on behalf of her husband's presidential campaign. One more thing on Iraq, and then I want to ask you about poverty. I saw a quote from you campaigning in New Hampshire last week where you said the troop surge is a, quote, complete and total failure, unquote. Did you say that, and is that the campaign's position?
If I didn't say it, I'll be happy to say it now. When bombs go off inside the Green Zone at the Iraqi parliament, you can be pretty much assured that the surge has not, in fact, put us in a better position. And when that happened, I think that was the moment at which the administration had the opportunity to say, okay, that's not the right path. But, of course, they've not yet said that ever.
But the White House asks how any Democrat can make such a declaration when half the troops in the surge aren't even there yet, and General Petraeus says it'll be September before he can make any real assessment.
The other reason you can say it is that this is not the first surge. This is the fifth surge. And
this surge.
You do have some additional troops there being held there by extensions of the time they're going to be there from 12 to 15 months, which is its own offense against these men and women who are serving us. But so you already have some surge, and the surge has been accompanied by an escalation. So. Yes, oh, you get more. Is that any, is there any indication whatsoever it's going to be successful? There's no indication.
New topic, poverty. Sure. This
yes.
Friday, I understand your husband will be speaking at a high school in Greene County, North Carolina, and promoting a pilot program there, part of his larger anti-poverty agenda, a pilot program there that he wants to take national called College for Everyone. Want to tell us about that?
John talked about this in 2003 and 2004, when the Kerry Edwards ticket was not successful, or when John's campaign for the nomination was not successful, he didn't quit thinking about it, and he raised the money to actually see whether such a program would work. He picked a poor county in eastern North Carolina, where about 25% of the high school graduates go on to college. They've seen that number, I think, maybe triple. Since the program has been in place, young people are required to take a college prep course, get admitted to college, and they also have to agree to do 10 hours of work a week, either volunteer or real work.
What about that? Why link a college grant to work?
Well, because they get paid for the work that they do. They don't have to turn it back in.
But to a work requirement. It sounds like workfare.
What it is saying that there's no free lunch in this, that you actually have to contribute. And it's John's experience and my experience, too. Both of us did a combination of loans and work to put ourselves through school. And that actually the working made us more focused, made us understand more why we were trying to get the degrees that we were trying to get.
I guess because the advantage that many better off students have is that their parents pay for college and they don't have to work rather than study. So why not just offer this as grants to kids whose income level qualifies and who gain admission to college?
I don't know that students who don't work in addition to being in college actually have an advantage. I think what you see, the most motivated people in colleges are often the ones who are, in addition to their schoolwork, are also maybe doing volunteer work. The top of the class in most places that you go across the country are those people who are doing something in addition to going to school at the same time.
So this is part, obviously, of the Edwards anti-poverty agenda.
Education has got to be part of any anti-poverty agenda.
And your campaign website declares a goal of ending poverty, ending it in 30 years. We had a war on poverty in America under President Johnson, and poverty won.
Yes.
What would President Edwards do differently?
Well, part of it, I think part of the problem with the Johnson program, as well intended as it was really a series of grants and it didn't require as much from the people who are trying to lift themselves out of poverty. There'll always be some entrenched poverty because poverty is caused by different reasons. There's some poverty that's accompanied by mental illness. There's some poverty that's accompanied by disabilities that are going to depress the earning capabilities of the people who are in poverty. But there's a great deal of the poverty in this country that is simply a lack of education, lack of opportunity, lack of hopefulness. William Raspberry had a wonderful thing that he said one time at a conference in Duke, at Duke, where he said in the poor neighborhoods that he visits, the young people, if asked, if you have a chance to get out of this neighborhood, And they say, you know, can you, and anyone get out? And they say, well, you know, if you're really, really smart or you're really, really talented, you can get out. The rest of us, we're not getting out.
In fact, I saw on the campaign website, and my guest is Elizabeth Edwards, wife of presidential hopeful John Edwards, one of the means of fighting poverty listed is breaking up areas of concentrated poverty. And I wonder if you're familiar enough with that to say how it might apply in New York City.
Well, one of the things, I'm not as familiar with New York City. I have to say, our daughter who's in, is doing housing policy as one of her electives in her first year of law school is actually studying this. And so I wish she were sitting here with me because I could turn the microphone over to her. So I'm not as familiar with what the circumstances are in New York City. I do know that we have, across the country, historically, had our subsidized housing in collective units. What John wants to do is to give housing vouchers that instead of these collections of people who are economically disadvantaged, to give housing vouchers that allow them to move into other neighborhoods. And when you talk about education being important, only if you're rich can you move to another school district if you don't like your school district.
We certainly have that here in New York, too, with large public housing developments.
Yes.
And the website also mentions strengthening families, which is more often associated as an issue of the right. So what's the Edwards approach to strengthening families?
Well, I mean, there's lots of components of this. One is to try to alleviate some of the economic pressures that that cause people to cause families to break down. And we have disparate such large differences between people of in various minority groups in terms of their asset bases. And if you increase the asset base and you increase the security of the family, and what we saw happen in New Orleans was when people were in these stressed situations, African-American families have much less in assets than Caucasian families, and Hispanic families also have much less. So when problems hit these families, those kinds of stresses, which are enormously disruptive, they have no place to go. So what John wants to do is add to the capability of these families to build the nest eggs that will protect them in the bad times, and that will happen.
So strengthening families is not a pro-marriage agenda, anti-divorce agenda, you know, Dan Quayle, Murphy Brown speech agenda?
No, it's not. Although what John has seen is he was gone across the country visiting as part of his work as director of the Center of Poverty, Work, and Opportunity at the University of North Carolina. And when he went across the country looking at self-help centers, he would often find that around the table were primarily women. The absent man in that equation, both either in terms of being present in the house, certainly being present in the participation in trying to lift this family out of poverty, is a hindrance. And we need to make certain that we provide the opportunity for men in economically depressed families to participate.
And you used to work as a bankruptcy lawyer in North Carolina, didn't you?
I did. I did litigation in bankruptcy cases, so I didn't ever. I didn't.
So it was like, more corporate than personal.
Well, yeah. This is sort of in the weeds for people, but in my law firm was a trustee. That's the person who is entrusted with trying to protect the unsecured creditors, the dry cleaners, the gas station, who have extended credit, as opposed to the bank who undoubtedly has a mortgage on.
Elizabeth Edwards is my guest on WNYC, wife of presidential hopeful John Edwards. She's also co-founder of the Wade Edwards Foundation and a former bankruptcy lawyer in North Carolina. And our phone number, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Mrs. Edwards here for about another 10 minutes. Denise in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Mrs. Edwards. It's so great to talk to you. I wanted to say real quick first on the city, the College for Everyone initiative. That sounds like a really great idea, and I'm a college student at City College. I don't know anybody who I go to school with who would turn down their first year's funding for a 10-hour a week job. I think it's an awesome idea. What I called for, though, was that I'm a really big supporter of John Edwards and your family and your campaign. But as an African American woman, this will be my second presidential election that I'm eligible to vote for. I sometimes feel a little bit guilty that I'm so strongly behind a Southern white candidate, as opposed to the first viable African American candidate in a while, and the first.
So, are you looking for her to assuage your black guilt?
You know, and not even. I mean, black and feminist guilt. You know, I kind of got a. I mean, this is like Shirley Chisholm divided in two people, and I don't think, you know, it makes me love John Edwards and any less. But I do feel a little bit guilty, and I don't always, you know, mm-hmm. shout from the rafters, I love John Edwards.
All right. Mrs. Edwards, what about that?
Well, I'm a woman as well, and I understand some of the dilemma that you're facing. But for me, the important part of what a president can do for us is, of course, they can be a role model. But it's more what they can do, not just as a role model, but what they do for the constituencies that we support. You know, African Americans in this country are disproportionately economically depressed. John is the only candidate with an anti-poverty program, and real ideas about how to solve that. Women in this country have been disproportionately hurt by the low minimum wage across this country. John has been the most active of the candidates with respect to statewide initiatives to raise minimum wage and working on the federal level as well to make certain that's how other candidates have done it, but no one has been as active as John has been. Another issue that's important to women, universal health care. John is the only candidate. So if what your concern is women across the board or African Americans across the board, I think honestly, and perhaps oddly, John is actually the best advocate for those groups.
Bob in Manhattan, you're on WNYC, WNYC with Elizabeth Edwards. Hello.
Good morning. First of all, good luck with your breast cancer fight.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. But I tell you what, I'm a Republican, and I just wanted to call you out on a few things of hypocrisy that I see. First of all, you're for the global warming thing, and then you built a gigantic house in, which is wasting energy like crazy, I imagine.
You got another one? Put them both on the table.
All right. Now, also, you criticized Laura Bush for being a stay-at-home mom when she was a teacher, which is one of the most noble things a person can do.
All right, let's do both of those.
Okay.
Global warming, your own carbon footprint compared to your position.
We do have a large house. There's a large portion of it which is actually not heated at the regular area because it's an area we don't use that much. We did build it, and I take responsibility for it, but it's not heated at the regular level. The entire house, though, is an Energy Star house, which means that we had to have an independent inspector come in, evaluate the house for how energy efficient it was, and the inspector said it was the second most energy efficient house that he had ever inspected. We use solar panels to heat our water. We and part of our flooring. We use fluorescent bulbs every place. Drive a hybrid car. Our carbon footprint in this house is probably no larger. I haven't analyzed it than our carbon footprint was in our much smaller house from which we moved.
And what did you say about Laura Bush?
And actually, I did not criticize Laura Bush for being a stay-at-home mom. I believe that was Teresa Heinz Kerry, who made that comment. I trained for a while to be a teacher. I substitute taught. I knew very well. My mother is a librarian. She was a librarian as well. I wouldn't have made such a comment. I have criticized Laura, not much, but she has a big megaphone sitting beside her as the First Lady, and she hasn't used it as much as I think she could have for the things that she and I actually agree upon that are enormously important, that literacy of young people is the key to their chances as adults.
There was a flap last fall on the other side that You reportedly said something to a Ladies' Home Journal luncheon comparing yourself to Senator Clinton, and the quote was, quote, "We both went to law school and married other lawyers, but after that we made other choices. I think my choices have made me happier. I think I'm more joyful than she is," unquote. Then you said you were misquoted by the magazine.
Yes.
So what's your version of what you actually said?
Well, I did have a flap with Ladies' Home Journal, who kept insisting there was a transcript when, in fact, there was no transcript. It was and the woman who took notes had a lot of mistakes in it.
What did you say?
I did say that that my choices had made me more joyful than the choices that Hillary and I had previously made. That was the import of what I was saying.
What does it mean?
It means that we had both made choices to work and to try to manage our families. I have to tell you that I know you have a guest later on. This is an enormous juggling act for women to try to do both these things at one time, and what you find yourself constantly doing is feeling inadequate at both of those things, and as you try as you might, you can't do both of those things perfectly. So when I gave up practicing law, something I could always go back to, I have to point out if I needed the economic security, I could always go back to that. But only having on my plate the care of my children and my family, and now the work I do campaigning, has made me much. It's relaxed me in an enormous way.
We have about 3 minutes left, and I know you have to go. The Detroit News has an article today headlined "Edwards Campaign Leads Pack in Online Supporter Access." Democratic challenger's operation is flooding the social networking sites in the push to be president. How webby are you and your husband?
I'm webbier than he is, but I know he gets on my computer because I see it when he closes down some of my windows. But
what do you mean you're webbier than he is?
Well, I mean, I have been using the Internet for probably 15 years. We were on before America. I was online before America Online started. We got to pick our names. I probably could have been Elizabeth at AOL if I'd wanted to.
Rather than Elizabeth 237.
Right, yes, right.
And the article says that you're largely responsible for how webby the two of you are.
Our son got us involved in it, and I just stayed involved, and I have found enormous communities of support on the Internet, and so I'm a true believer in the communities we can form there.
The article says your husband has signed up on at least 23 social networking sites for the campaign. Do you see any concrete benefits from that so far?
I think that the idea is to reach people who might not otherwise be engaged in the political process, and that's the reason you go to places that are maybe less political, to introduce yourself to them. Maybe they get interested. To the extent to which people follow through, I think it's really going to be hard to find that. I guess if there's probably somebody who knows the click-throughs to the campaign. I don't actually know those numbers.
One political question concerning yourself, and I'm sure you don't look at your health in political terms, but the American people would have to be comfortable with the potential effects on the president of a wife battling incurable cancer while having two children at home in the White House. How much can you reassure people that that's not too big a risk with regard to a President Edwards job performance?
Well, one of the things that I think that people have seen across this country about John in this health crisis that we've faced this time is we've seen that he's a person of enormous strength and focus. And it's something that I saw privately in 1996 when our 16-year-old son died. Did it knock him back? It knocked us both back. Did he lie down? He didn't. He stood up and started fighting the Wade Edwards Learning Lab, both one in Raleigh and one in Goldsboro, North Carolina, the Wade Edwards Short Fiction Contest. He immediately got to work trying to make something good out of what had happened. And I think one of the things he's done with respect to this, to our health crisis, is instead of wallowing in it, he has made this a yet another opportunity for us to talk about the important issue of health care in this country. I think that he will make lemonade out of this no matter what.
I read that it was the death of your son, Wade, that actually got you so involved in the internet. Is that correct?
Well, it was actually the life of my son, Wade, who was enormously interested in the internet. And he's the one who first got me involved in it. And so we actually did a lot of things together. Bought sports cards on the internet back in the days when there would be internet sports card auctions.
Is YouTube good for democracy?
YouTube is fabulous for democracy because the more we see people in unscripted moments, the better it is for the American people. Not everybody will agree with that, the former senator from Virginia being one of them. It's really important that the American people get a chance to see candidates crossing the street or speaking to somebody in a restaurant or in the unguarded moments where you actually learn a lot about the character of a person.
Elizabeth Edwards, thank you so much for coming into our studio today.
It's been great to be with you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in a minute. Some churches in New York declare themselves sanctuaries for illegal immigrants. Stay tuned.